All right, for this morning, I do want to follow the same theme. And we talked about that already today, but the theme is temptation, right? And you guys were in 1 Corinthians 10, and you dealt with it there. We're going to be in Matthew 26. So if you'd like to go ahead and open your Bibles there, you can. If you don't have a Bible, the text is in the bulletin, and it's also on the wall. So you can follow along that way as well. But I want to share a thought with you today. We're going to title Relentless. We're going to title it Relentless. And I want to talk through this word initially before we really get into the message. What we're really going to work through is this. How can we live in victory? How can we be relentless against the one who is relentless against us? We have an adversary, right, who seeks to destroy us. And so we need to be on the aggressive. We need to be on the positive side of things, looking for how we can act, how we are to respond. And we'll talk through some of that here this morning. But let's define the term. So if you were going to define relentless, what does that term mean to you? What's it mean to be relentless? Ma'am? Reckless? It sounds like that, doesn't it? Not giving up, okay? Never ending. Anybody else you think of relentless? Right, so that's exactly true. It's the idea of being steady and persistent. Steady and persistent. So there's no wane to it whatsoever. It's just continual. So it's like the tide that rolls in and rolls out. It always happens. And so that's the picture. That's the graphic on the wall today. Just that reminder that it's continual. It's persistent. It's steady. It's steadfast. We need to be relentless. So probably somewhere along the way, you and I have been relentless in our pursuit of things. Maybe you've been relentless in your pursuit of growing the perfect tomato. Anybody tried that? No? Or growing anything. All right, trying to develop your green thumb. Maybe you've been persistent in a relationship, trying to pursue this guy or this girl. Maybe you've been persistent after a job, or persistent after money, or persistent after a degree. We understand what it means to be relentless, to steadily chase or pursue something. And so that's the idea here we're going to try to understand this morning. For me, I can remember all sorts of ways I've been relentless, but in one, the first one I think of is when I was about maybe a sophomore in high school playing basketball. I wanted to be able to dunk a basketball. And so I had friends who could dunk in middle school, and I thought that was the coolest thing ever. And so I'd spend hours just working on jumping, trying to dunk a basketball. My dad would come out in the driveway and say, "It's 2 points either way. You know, work on your footwork. Work on your fundamentals." Yeah, I'm going to work on dunking. And so it was finally my junior year. It was the first time I was able to dunk a ball. And it came pretty easy for a while. And then it's gone. Right? I don't even know if I can touch the net anymore. But I remember that feeling of just, I finally have done it. Right? I'm just going to chase it and chase it and chase it until it finally happens. Some of you have got squirrels in your backyard who are relentless in eating your bird feed. Right? And so you've come up with all sorts of contraptions to try to keep them out, and they just keep getting in. They're just relentless little critters. And so the picture here is that they're steady, they're persistent. And we are to be that example here this morning of someone who is unrelenting, somebody who is relentless. This word also carries with it a negative side, which means to be merciless. It means to be hard or fierce or harsh or cruel. So when we think about our adversary, that definitely fits him, right? He is relentless against us. He is fierce. He is harsh. He is hard. He is cruel. He's looking to undermine and to destroy us. And so his pursuit of us is steady and persistent, which requires and begs us to be relentless in return. What I want to do is look at Jesus here in Matthew 26. I want to look at how he was faced with a situation where he could have easily given up. How he battled that situation, how he coached his disciples to battle that situation, and what we can take from it ourselves here this morning as it relates to temptation. Any of you ever tempted? I'm going to scoop to you. Are you ever tempted? Have any of you got to the place where you're never tempted anymore? That'd be nice, wouldn't it? Right? There may be some things that you've gained victory over, but as long as we still need air, we still need to be relentless against our tempter. As long as we're breathing this side of the dirt, we're going to be tempted. And so today it's how do we battle that? How can we be relentless against temptation? Matthew 26 is where we find Jesus here initially. And what's going on here in the beginning of this chapter, you've got the Jesus telling his disciples that I'm going to be crucified. They're going to hand me over, I'm going to be arrested, crucified, and I'm going to come back to life. And the very next verses say, and the chief priests and the elders were getting together plotting how they would arrest Jesus and have him killed. Okay? So he's telling his disciples what's going on, while at the same time these guys are trying to figure out how they're going to make it happen. So you've got his announcement and you've got their plot or their plan. This is also where you see the woman who comes into Jesus and pours the oil over his head. You remember that? And just covers him all over. And his disciples are livid. Like, we could have sold that for a lot of money and helped a lot of poor people. And Jesus said, what? The poor you'll always have with you, right? This woman, what she has done has to prepare me for burial. And what she has done will be spoken of wherever the gospel is spoken of. And that really made me think. If that's true, then are we telling her story? And that was just a personal kind of conviction in my own soul. If it's true that we're telling the gospel and her story is going to be told, then we should be telling her story if we're really telling the gospel. And so we're telling her story in really brief detail here today. But she came in to anoint Jesus, to worship him, and he gives some guidance there to his disciples concerning her act. This is also where they have the Last Supper, and Jesus says to his guys, one of you is going to betray me. And so these guys start saying, not me. Not me. You know, I'll die for you, right? I'll die with you. And this is where we see Jesus point to Judas. It's also where Judas has just accepted the money to betray Jesus with a kiss. And so all that's going on in chapter 26. What we find then, the supper is ended, and they're going to head out into the garden. They're going to go pray for a little while, and that's where we're picking up our story. Matthew 26, we're going to go 36 to 46 here this morning. All right, beginning 36 says, then Jesus came with them to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, sit here while I go and pray over there. And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, and he began to be sorrowful and deeply distressed. And then he said to them, my soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even to death. Stay here and watch with me. And so you've got 8 disciples who are a ways back. You've got 3 disciples who traveled a little bit further with Jesus. Now, he told them to stay here. Another gospel says Jesus went a stone's throw away, and that's where he knelt down to pray. Verse 39, he went a little farther, and he fell on his face, and he prayed, saying, oh, my Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will. And then he came to the disciples, and he found them sleeping. And so he says to Peter, what? Could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray, lest you enter into temptation. That spirit is indeed willing, but the flesh is weak. Again, a second time he went away and he prayed, saying, oh, my Father, if this cup cannot pass away from me unless I drink it, your will be done. And he came and found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy. And so he left them and he went away again and he prayed the third time, saying the same words. And then he came to his disciples and said to them, are you still sleeping and resting? Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise and let us be going. See, my betrayer is at hand. And so it is this morning. I want to work through this situation that Jesus was in. How did he deal with it? What does he advise his disciples for them to deal with certain situations, and how can that apply to us here today? 3 things we'll note if you're following along your bulletin. You don't have to. That's just there for our personal benefit. So if you're a writer, you can write these down if you would so like. The first thing is this. We need to be relentless in our temptation. And that means we've got to watch out for our enemy. We need to watch out for our enemy. Watch for our enemy. And that enemy is the devil. And so here we find Jesus. He's staring his darkest day right in the face, right? His darkest day that he would ever experience here, walking this earth, he's looking it right in the eye. And he's trying to figure out how he's going to present himself to the Lord. He's trying to get his will submitted to his Father's. But prior to this moment, we didn't read this in the text, but Jesus knew what was going on, right? That's why he was predicting his crucifixion and all these sorts of things. So he knew what was happening. In John 14:30, we see him saying this, that there were he was looking around and he could see that his adversary was working against him. So let's read that, John 14, verse 30. Jesus says, I will not say much more to you, for the prince of this world is coming. And so he was alert to all the plotting and all the planning going on behind closed doors. Right? He knew his time was coming where he was going to be arrested and crucified. So he's saying here in John, I see him. I'm watching, I'm looking for Satan, and I see that he's active. He's on the move. He's working to have me betrayed. Verse 45 in our text that we read says this as well. Let's read that. Matthew 26:45. Then he returned to the disciples and he said to them, are you still sleeping and resting? Look, the hour has come and the Son of Man is delivered into the hands of sinners. And so initially Jesus says the word watch, and now he wakes up his disciples and what's he say? Look. Be on the watch, but there's going to be a time coming when you're going to see it happening. And for Jesus, he says, my hour has come. This is my time. This is my struggle. This is my temptation. This is my battle. It's here now. And so he was demonstrating what it means to watch out for the adversary. When we watch, we need to pay good attention because we will see as we look. Let's go back to verse 41. Why do we watch? Why do we watch? Verse 41 says, watch and pray so that you will not what? So that you will not fall into temptation. Listen, we're to be on our guard, church. We've got an adversary who is working against us, and he is tireless. Right? He is working to bring about not just a bad day, he's working to ruin us. He's working to bring us down. Think about a boxing match. I don't know if any of you have ever boxed before. If you've ever been in a fight with your brother or sister and you started throwing punches, usually the one that gets hit is the one who lowers their guard, right? So my dad bought us boxing gloves when we were kids. I guess he knew something. And he taught me to box with my thumb sticking out with boxing gloves on. He said, you hold it in front of your face like this. And you know what my dad did? Dunk. You know what your thumb does? And so I started weighing like a little baby. And he says, don't ever hold your thumbs out. So I learned a lesson that day, right? Thanks, Dad. But the idea there was when we would box, whoever would drop their guard was the one who'd get socked. And you see these professional boxers, they're clued in, right? They've got their guard up and they're getting hit in their sides and they're getting hit in the gloves and the side of the head. But when they get TKO'd, when they get knocked out, somewhere they've opened the gap or they've taken a swing and they've let down their guard and they get dropped, okay? That's how it works with Satan. Satan's looking for you and I just to drop our guard just a little bit. He's looking for that opening because he wants to swing that hammer. He wants to drop us, not just to bring a bad day, but he wants to destroy us. Let's read about Satan here in 1 Peter 5:8. It says, be alert. Here again, watch. Be alert and be of sober mind. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. And so it's not just, hey, I want to mess with your day. I'm playing a prank on you. He's saying, I want to destroy you. I want to ruin you. I want to draw you away from God. I want you to experience eternal life away from him. I want you to be with me. And so he is definitely against us. He is our adversary. And the way that he works is by tempting us. Right? And so God has not given him freedom just to come in and start destroying people, just blowing us up. But he does have access to our minds. He does have access to our mouths so that we can begin to speak things that aren't right, think things that aren't correct, and then we start acting on those things. So we have an adversary who is out to TKO us. He's looking to bring us down. And so Peter says, just as Jesus said, watch, be alert. Let's think about it this way for a minute. Let's say we had a gentleman coming from St. Louis Zoo, and he was going to talk to us about how animals connect with the Bible. So we invited this guy to come out, and he shows up out here in a truck, and he's got a male kitten, a little kitty. You understand me? Anybody know how much a male kitten weighs? Somebody said it. Weighs about 2 pounds. Okay? And so let's say this male kitten, the guy brings it in, and it jumps out of his arms, and it gets loose. And we're all sitting in here, and he comes busting those doors. He says, hey, listen, I know I was going to show you this little kitten, but he's loose in the building. I don't know where he is. You guys look terrified. Would we panic? No. Probably for some of us sometimes, that wouldn't even wake us up out of our slumber. Oh, it's a kitty. Okay. God loves me. Corey's about through. So we wouldn't panic that way. Now let's flip that. Let's say that he walks in with an adult male lion. Anybody know how much an adult male lion weighs? You're really, yes, sir. Between 550 and 600 pounds is an adult male lion. Okay, so this guy comes busting in the doors out here and says, hey, listen, I brought this lion in. He's loose in the building. I have no idea where he is. What are we going to do? Panic's going to set in, right? You think we're going to watch? Think we're going to be on the alert? Think you're going to be listening to what I'm saying? I'm not even going to be listening to what I'm saying. Right? We're looking for the way out. Or we're going to shut all the doors, make sure he can't get in here. We're watching for him because he can destroy us. He's a meat eater. And they've proven that they will attack humans sometimes. And so if this thing's loose in the building, I'm looking out. I'm on the alert. And so Peter says here, pay attention. Watch. Be alert. Because your adversary, he's not a little kitten. He's a male lion. And he's looking to destroy you. And so when we toy around with sin, acting like it's no big deal, holding the little string in front of the kitty, all we're doing is egging him on in our destruction. And so Jesus says, you don't play around with Satan. He is something to be respected. Someone to be respected. Not someone to fear, but he's certainly someone to watch out for. So that 550 or that 600-pound lion will get our attention. When Jesus told his disciples, watch, I don't know how it didn't get their attention. I do know how, because his word says that to me, and there's been too many times where I wasn't watching and I got TKO'd. The devil tempted me and I gave in. Submitted, whatever, going somewhere I shouldn't, saying something I shouldn't, thinking something I shouldn't, acting in ways that are not God honoring. And he won that battle. He's looking to destroy us, church. And so Jesus says initially, watch. Watch. And how should we watch? Relentlessly, steadily, persistently. That means always. Even right here in this building. Does Satan work in churches? Oh, man. He knows how to stir a pot, doesn't he? Satan worked in your family, works at your job. Man, he works within us. And so we know he's working everywhere, and he's trying to just make a mess of things. And so Jesus says, you be alert, pay attention, look. See, Jesus saw it coming. The disciples didn't. We'll talk about that here in just a minute. We need to watch. To be relentless in temptation means we are looking out, watching for our enemy. Secondly, here, to be relentless in temptation means we must rely on our ally. We must rely on our ally, and that ally is God. And so here we find Jesus modeling this for us here, right in that garden as he is praying. As Jesus is praying, he says that he sees this plan of the devil coming to fruition, right? He sees that they're coming to grasp him. And so he doesn't say, hey, it's no big deal. I've got this covered. I'm the Son of God. I don't need any help. You just wait till they show up. I'm going to blow them up. I'm going to TKO them. They think they're coming for me. I got something for them. He didn't respond that way. What's Jesus do? He models for us and he demonstrates how we are to deal with our temptation. Verse 39 says, going a little farther, he fell with his face to the ground and he prayed, my Father, if it's possible, may this cup be taken from me, yet not as I will, but as you will. And so what's he pray? How does he address his prayer? He says, my Father. My Father. And what we can see here is even in the midst of our greatest battle, even in the midst of our strongest temptation, we have a Heavenly Father who is our advocate, who's working on our behalf. His Son is our advocate. They're trying to protect us, working to help us. They are to be our source. They are to be our strength. See, God, in that sense, is our ally, which is to say, the Father and the Son, we're connected, right? And if we're believers, if we're Christians, we're also allies. That word ally means that we are united, or it means we are connected in a personal relationship. And so God is my ally. We are together in this thing. We see David illustrate this beautifully. As he was facing dark days. Psalm 138, verse 3, David says this, when I called, you answered me, and you greatly what? You greatly emboldened me. Where is Jesus? Matthew 26 here, about verse 38 or 39. He's out in the middle of this garden just pouring his guts out. All right? He's praying, and he's praying, and he's praying. He's trying to be strengthened for about what is to happen. David says, when I cried to the Lord, he strengthened me. And Luke records this same story, but he adds this about Jesus' prayer. Luke 22, verse 43, when Jesus prayed, Father, I don't know if I can do this. If there's any other way, let's do it. But if not, may your will be done. Verse 43 says, an angel from heaven appeared to him and strengthened him. An angel of the Lord appeared to him and strengthened him. And so listen, we need to be people who are praying when we're battling our temptation. I want you to see here, though there's just a few words recorded that Jesus prayed, the text says Jesus prayed for at least an hour before he came back to the boys. See, Jesus didn't just pray, Father, may your will be done, and just skip his way to the cross. He sweat. He pleaded. He begged. He cried. He was asking the Father, if there's any other way to do this thing, then let's think about it. If not, may your will be done. He was relentless in his pursuit. We need to be relentless in our pursuit of God. Therefore, we need to be people who are praying. See, the truth of the matter is, we need to learn how to, and I need to learn how to trust more in God to work through my temptation rather than trusting in myself. I need to allow God to strengthen me, right? Jesus didn't say, I've got this covered. He said, boys, watch and pray. And then he says, I'm looking, and we see him out in the garden demonstrating exactly what he had commanded or commissioned them to do. Prayer is pivotal. It's key for you and I being able to battle temptation. See, somewhere we bought the lie which says I can battle on my own. You ever been there? I'm big enough. I should be able to handle this. I can take care of this myself. And so maybe that's battling an addiction. Maybe that's battling your mouth. Can't control your temper. Can't control, you know, you've got, what's that called? Open mouth, insert foot syndrome. Yeah, sometimes we just have that rampant. Yeah, and so whatever it is that we may be faced with or tempted with, sometimes we think, I should be able to do this by myself. If I was a mature Christian, I wouldn't have this problem. If I was a mature Christian, then I wouldn't react this way. If I was a mature Christian, then I wouldn't have these thoughts. And so we start thinking that in ourselves, we're qualified. In ourselves, we've got this covered. And what that always leads to, friend, is defeat. How many times have you said, I'm never going to do that again, and you did it again? I promise, I'll never talk that way again, and the next thing you're just talking that way again. I promise I'll never say that, or I promise I'll never think that, I promise I'll never go there. And yet we find ourselves in those exact positions all over again. You and I are not able within ourselves to defeat our adversary. All we end up with is what we could call a plate of failure. You know, go order that at Cracker Barrel today. I'm sure you'll enjoy that. I'll take a plate of failure. You know what it covers? You know what comes covering it? When you get a plate of failure, you get guilt gravy. And it's just smothered. Because then you just start beating yourself up. When you think you're strong enough on your own, you're going to start why can't I overcome this addiction? Why can't I stop thinking this way? Why can't I talk better? Why can't I stay away from this person? Why can't I close my eyes? We start beating ourselves up over something that we're not equipped to handle on our own. A plate full of failure always is accompanied with the smothering of guilt gravy. Listen, relying on ourselves always ends in defeat. So don't rely on yourself when you're facing that temptation, whatever it is. So we don't rely on ourselves. We also don't rely on each other. And we're to pray for one another, but you're not my source. You're not my help. When I'm being tempted, I'm not going to come beat on your door. Let me in. You got to help me. And we may be accountable. We may help one another, but my source, my strength is the Lord. And Jesus modeled that for us. Matthew Henry says it this way. Jesus' friends were where? Jesus' friends were asleep, but his enemy was awake. So you start putting your hope in your kids. You start putting your hope in your spouse. You start putting your hope in your pastor, your Sunday school teacher, that they're the ones who are going to help you deal with your temptation. We can coach and you can coach back. But my source is God. He's my ally. He's the one that I run to when I find myself being tempted. So I'm not going to run to myself. I'm not going to run to somebody else. I'm going to run to the one that we sung about today. Never once has he left us on our own, right? You are faithful. He's always faithful. He's always ready, always willing to work and to help us through whatever it is that our temptation may be. Matthew 6:13, Jesus was answering a question of his disciples. Master, teach us how to pray. And Jesus says, all right, here's how you pray, guys. Verse 13, he says, and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. Listen, if we have an enemy who is relentless in pursuing us, then we need to be relentless in seeking our God to protect us. So I'm going to ask for your prayers, and you'll ask for mine. But you're not my source, nor am I yours. God is our ally. He is the one that we run to. He is the one that we pray to while we watch all along looking for our adversary as he tries to tempt and attack. And so how do I be relentless in temptation? I'm going to be on guard. I'm going to watch for my enemy. I'm going to pray. I'm going to seek out my ally. But I always have to respond, right? I have to do something in the situation. And so I'm looking. I see that I'm being tempted. I'm praying. I'm asking the Lord for help. Now what? Now what do I do? Third and last this morning, we must respond with God's honor as our goal. That should be my mindset. We must respond with God's honor as our goal. And so the end effect of this is, it's always about God's honor. So after you and I have this conversation, I want to be able to say that God was honored by my speech. After we have this conversation, we want to say God is honored. After we go through this situation, whatever it is, I want to be able to say, all right, God, you've seen us through this. We didn't balk. We didn't quit. We didn't give up. You've been faithful. And I want him to be able to look at my life and say, and so have you. You've tried to honor me through this. You didn't just give in. You didn't just say, what's the worth? You didn't just quit. You were persistent. You were relentless in working your way through that temptation. And when I'm faced with temptation, whatever it may be, I always want to respond with, will God be honored? So we've talked here before, when somebody comes up and says, you know, you're ugly and your mama dresses you funny, what do you want to say back? Yeah, I mean, we've got a comeback line, right? Is God honored there? Well, I mean, they said it to me first. I didn't ask if they said it to you first. I'm just asking, is God honored there? Well, I didn't ask you if they provoked you. I'm saying the way that you spoke, the way that I spoke, the way that we reacted in that moment, was God honored? If not, then God didn't win. Temptation took root, and it beat us. It TKO'd us for that moment. We're to respond with God's honor. God's honor, always. And so how do I deal with my temptation? I'm going to think about God's honor, and there's two ways to really face it. All right. There is a third way. The third way is to give in, but we're talking about how do we resist it? How can we be relentless against it? So there's really two ways to be relentless against it. We can either face it head on and deal with it, or we can flee. We can face it, or we can flee. And for Jesus, he says to his disciples, let's go face it. Let's go to verse 46 there. Matthew 26, verse 46. Jesus says, rise, let us go. Here comes my betrayer. And so what is Jesus saying to them? He didn't wake them up and say, listen, we need to book it because they're coming through the woods and they're going to arrest me. I know what's going to happen, so we got to get out of here. No, Jesus said, get up and let's go meet them. This is my hour. And so he's willing to stand and face this battle head on. He's determined. He's relentless. He's been watching. He's been praying. He's prepared for the moment. God had strengthened him, and now he's ready. See, sometimes we need to just stand up to temptation and look it in the eye and say, you don't win in my life. I'm watching out for you, Satan. I know you're trying to work against me, but I've been praying for the Lord and to the Lord, and he's given me strength. And so I'm not going to think those thoughts. I'm not going to talk that way. I'm not going to react that way, because God is equipping me to defeat you. And so we don't run in cowardice. We run there strengthened, boldened. I am prepared, because I've been watching, because I've been praying. So sometimes the right thing to do is to stand up and face that temptation head on and deal with it. Sometimes, however, the right thing to do, the best thing to do, is to flee. And so why do we flee? Do we flee because we're unprepared? No, the idea is not to be unprepared. I'm not saying don't watch and don't pray, just run away from sin. No, you'll always end up, remember, with your plate full of failure and that smothering of guilt gravy. So the whole idea here then is fleeing is that it's really a sign of maturity. Some people say to run is to be a coward. Remember that? Growing up in our neighborhood, guys would come over and they were bigger than you and they'd take your toys and play your game and you'd have to sit and watch. And they're like, you going to let them take your ball? No, man. You go do something about it. No, I'm not going to do anything about it. And so we walk out all huff and gruff like we're going to do something. We're going to take our ball back, right? We're not going to flee away like cowards. We probably should have ran sometimes, but we wouldn't run. It wasn't about being scared. See, sometimes we think fleeing from temptation means I'm a weak Christian. Fleeing from temptation means I am immature, when the other side of the coin is actually the right side. It's the truth. It demonstrates that I have some wisdom on my side. There's a gentleman we've been talking with who has an alcohol problem, and all of his friends are in the bar, and he's getting away from the alcohol, and he's been away from it for years here, and he says, I won't go back to the bar. Why? Does he hate his friends? He loves his friends. He knows if he walks back in that door, he's going to be tempted in a way that he may not be able to handle. So we could say, oh, you're a weak Christian. No, I say you're a strong Christian. You're mature because you're watching. You're seeing that that is a hindrance for you. And so you're not willing to put yourself in that situation. Maybe God hasn't given you the strength to be able to walk in and face it head on. But that doesn't make you a coward. That doesn't make you weak. That's a sign of maturity. I'm not going to that place because I know how it always wins in my life. Sometimes we respond by facing, and sometimes we respond by fleeing. What did the disciples do? So Jesus told them, watch, pray, now let's go and face the adversary. And Jesus was strengthened. He told the disciples to watch and pray, and they did what? And they went to sleep. And when they faced the adversary, what did they do? They fled because they were cowards. They weren't strengthened. They weren't emboldened. They weren't looking to the Lord to equip them to battle that situation. They simply fled. Listen, our adversary knows how to get us at our weakest moments, doesn't he? He's relentless in his pursuit of us because he knows when we get tired, what happens when we get tired? We give up. All I'm asking you to do is watch for 1 hour. You just said back up there when we were eating the supper that you would go with me to the ends of the earth, that you would die with me, and all I'm asking you to do is stay awake and pray for 1 hour, and you can't even do that. The Bible says their eyes got heavy. You know when you know your eyes are heavy? It's when you're fighting it. And so maybe they tried to battle a little bit. I don't know. We were driving home from Florida here the other day. It got up about 3:30. And for me, that lull hits about 1:30 to 3:30. When you hit Marion, I'm just... Oh. Chewing on a cup, chewing on a straw, whatever I can do, just keep myself... Oh. That's when I know my eyes are heavy, when I'm weary. And what I really want to do is just what? I just want to give in. The devil knows if he can be relentless in attacking us and getting us tired, that we're just going to give in. And we're going to lose that battle. Here comes that left hook. Here comes that haymaker, and it's looking to knock us out. And we're not prepared. And he's going to drop us to our knees. We don't flee because we're cowards. We flee sometimes because we are prepared. Makes me think of Joseph. Remember Joseph? Joseph was a man that God honored. Back in the Old Testament, the book of Genesis, more than half the book's about Joseph. Joseph was in Potiphar's house, had been there as a servant, a slave. Potiphar was out on a business trip. Potiphar's wife got a little lonely, and so she makes some advances towards Joseph. What's Joseph do? Joseph flees. See, Joseph knew something there. To sit and have a conversation with Mrs. Potiphar, I understand that you're lonely, and I understand how that can make you feel. It's just, this is probably not a good thing for us to engage in, so you know, let's just act like this. He knew that was not going to get anywhere with Potiphar's wife, and so he fled. Maybe Job knew that it wasn't good for him to stay there because he would act in a way that he shouldn't act. And so he did what was right, what was best. Sometimes the best thing to do is to get away. You got friends that are always trying to drag you away from Christ, get away. you can't stand up and look that thing face in the face and win that battle, then it's time to step back. I've told you before, my sophomore year of college, one of my best friends on the planet, he and I had a conversation on the back steps of our dorm, and I said, I can't stay tight with you anymore because you're heading a direction that's not good for me. And though I want to follow you and engage the lifestyle that you're trying to lead, I can't go there. So we split ways. And now, I mean, we've been reconnected. We're better friends than ever. But sometimes you got to separate yourself from the things that seek to destroy you. So it could be a friend. It could be a computer screen. Right? It could be pride. I don't know what your temptation is, but sometimes what we have to do is put some distance between us and that which seeks to destroy us. Use wisdom. Pray. Ask the Lord to give you direction. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 10. You guys read this morning. Verse 13, as we talk about looking to live our life for God's honor, we can face it or flee it. Paul says, no temptation has overtaken you except what's common to mankind. And God is faithful. He won't let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, he will also provide what? He'll provide a way out so that you can endure it. You know why you watch? We watch for our adversary, but we're also looking for that way out. Right, God, open that door. And we've just got to always be praying. Listen, we're always going to be tempted, so we're always watching, always praying, always thinking about God's honor. In these ways, we can be relentless in our pursuit against our adversary. And so we've tried to talk through here Jesus' battle just a little bit. We think about his darkest day and how he dealt with it. He wasn't a coward. He was heavy. He felt the weight of it. He was watching. He was praying. And he responded with God's honor in mind, didn't he? He sat there and said, not my will, but your will be done. Not my will, but your will be done. Not mine, but yours. Always looking for God's honor. And so today, what he coached his disciples in is still good news for you and I. We're going to battle temptation. We have a relentless adversary. How do we be relentless in return? We watch out for him. We pray. Trust God to strengthen us, and when the moment comes, we act with boldness. Maybe that's face it, or maybe that's flee it, but we respond with God's honor in mind. And so what I simply wonder today, guys, is this. Are you relentless in your pursuit against your tempter? Are you relentless against his attacks? Are you looking out for him? You got your guard up. Are you praying? You trust in the Lord to give you strength. Listen, I can assure you, as we've already said, your adversary is working right now to destroy you. He wants to get you to sin. He wants to cause you just to take that first step. And listen, he's not the guy who swings for the fences. Right? He's going to do a jab here, jab there, jab here. He's just weakening us all along until that moment comes when we drop our guard. And whammo. He's looking to destroy us. See, those little secret sins that we think are nothing are going to work to expose us to be somebody who does not live for God's honor. So every day and every little thought, every day and every little private conversation, every day and every situation, it's always got to be about God's honor. So pray. Be relentless in your prayer. Remember, Jesus didn't pray just a 5-minute prayer and skip to the cross. He prayed and he prayed and he bore his cross. Difficult. It was hard. And living here is hard some days, isn't it? We sing that verse in the song. I can't remember the exact lyric now, but it was talking about where I will be with the Lord. And man, that just wells up in me today. Just like, man, I look for that day so often. I'm just not weary anymore. I'm not tired anymore. I'm not battled anymore. You don't see the consequences of sin anymore. You just get fed up sometimes. But until that day, his promise is, I will strengthen you. And so I just wonder, how well are you battling? How well are you battling? Right now when you face your temptation, are you focused on yourself and your own pleasure in the moment? Or are you really focusing on God's honor? And this may not be what I want to say. This may not be the way that I want to act. But I know it's right. I know it's best. And so I'll pursue the Lord in this. At the end of the day, when I lay my head down, I'll be able to say, I've lived for your honor. I've tried to please you.